Hi, welcome back to the Talking Downey Podcast Business Edition. I'm Natalie Tercios, and today we're so excited to be sitting down with Simon, someone who has transformed the nightlife here in Downey. So welcome, Simon. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you so much for having me, Natalie. I really appreciate the opportunity to have a conversation with you about Downey and business in Downey.
Right? I know. We're so excited. I mean, you pretty much transformed the nightlife here in Downey. It's like you have two blocks going on for you, right?
Yeah. It's been quite a journey. Yeah. I started about, like, I want to say about 14 years ago. Mm-hmm. And there was really nothing here in downtown Downey when we opened.
No. Yeah. And have you noticed some changes? What are some things that you've noticed since back then to now?
It's just been an amazing transformation. I'll be honest with you. I'm impressed with all the work and effort and the excitement where people are trying to get involved in specifically really just this block between 2nd and 3rd on Downey Avenue. And it's been kind of fun, you know, to see the transformation from what I think it was 13 years ago when we started the project for Joseph's.
Wow. Yeah.
And honestly, I mean, I have a story for that one. It's funny, but it'll kind of tell you, it'll give you a point of view on how the street really transformed and how much advancement we've gotten to the nightlife in Downey versus where we were 13, 14 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. So how did Joseph start?
Well, I used to come to Granada's with my wife and kids, and I really liked the layout. I liked the patio that they had built, and I always had a draw to opening up a sports bar. But the problem with sports bars, which I always, what kind of affected me, because I have a problem with, you know, fried foods.
Oh, okay.
Is that the level of food that they serve at sports bars isn't usually up to par. So I kind of got the idea of opening up a sports bar that serves like higher end food, trying to, like, you know, capture both the best of both worlds, you know, serving good food and allowing people to watch the game. When I first started it, my first initial idea changed like 20 times by the time we finally built. You know, we started off with like having like, you know, maybe 10 screens, and then somewhere another in there we decided like trying to like break the internet, like, you know, people say nowadays, and put like literally 50 TVs in there.
Wow.
When we opened with 50 flat screen TVs. 14 years ago, flat screen TVs were not, you know, like where you
anything.
Find. Yeah, it's not where you find nowadays. You know, a lot of, there was plasma back then, and, you know, there wasn't like 80, 90 inch screens. I think the largest screen was like 60 inches back then.
Wow.
So it was a challenge getting our hands on 50 TVs at the time. And the technology on like making them all work and function together was a little difficult, but we were able to do it. We hired a cordon bleu chef to, you know, head the kitchen, create a menu. I think we were like one of the first ones that had like the Kraft mac and cheeses. He did a chorizo mac and cheese and a four cheese artichoke mac and cheese, which was like something that was like very new. Then we did like a twist on the stuffed jalapenos. You know, usually you go get like cheese stuffed. Well, we did chicken stuffed jalapenos.
Oh, that sounds really
so
good.
So wrapped in bacon. And, you know, everything was fresh. I mean, still is. Everything is still fresh there. But like I said, everything morphs into what it's supposed to be eventually. When we first came here, like I said, 14 years ago, when we were at Granada's was just, I think it had just sold to somebody. And the person really didn't change the building in any way. He just changed the name. He changed it to Granada's and Tapas, which made it like an appetizer place. We would go eat there because I liked the location, but it was always like empty. So one day we were there, I was there with a bunch of guy friends. We were like, you know, guys' night out. We were going to go smoke hookah across the street, and we were there, and we were in the patio smoking cigars. And one of my friends recognized the owner, and I guess they knew each other since they were kids. And he knew I was interested, so he kind of threw it out there to him. He's like, hey, you know, doesn't look like you're busy. If you're struggling, I have somebody who's interested, you know. And then so he was like, oh, I'm looking for a partner. Like he was nice. Looking for money infused.
Okay.
And I was like, look, I'm really not looking to partner up with somebody I don't know. I mean, I do have partners, but usually they're people I know.
Mm-hmm.
He was looking for a partner that just wanted to give him money and he was going to run it. I was like, look, I already know the business. I was a partner, one of the partners at the stock exchange in downtown LA, late 90s, early 2000s.
Okay.
It was like the hottest nightclub in LA for like 8 years. Like literally, and when I say LA, I mean like greater LA. Like it was crazy. We would have like 700-800 to 1,000 people inside.
Wow.
With another 1,000 people outside waiting to get in. And at like 11 o'clock, 11:30, we'd have to tell the crowd they're not getting in. It was like kind
it's
of crazy.
So busy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very exclusive.
Yeah. So, and you know, it was like, it was a different time, obviously, you know, mm-hmm. club time. Now it's more lounge time.
Right.
Yeah. But so I was already familiar with the business. I knew what I wanted. I had a direction in mind. And so I decided to not partner up. I offered a purchase price and took a while, but he finally agreed. And when we bought the place, I called a couple of my friends, to partner up with me if they were interested. And they hopped on because they know, you know, what I'm capable of. And so we started gutting the place out. Like we literally poured, we wanted to buy the building. The Granada family was not selling the building. Because we knew how much money we were going to put in. And we put in, at that time was a lot. I mean, nowadays people scoff at it. It's still a lot, but people still scoff at that number. It was $1 million.
That's a lot.
Yeah. We put $1 million into the building just in a remodel. Building that's not yours, that's a lot. But I know that there was a lot of buzz. And we were like in construction for like 9 months. And everybody in the city was just curious. Because I was also new to the city. I had moved here like 2 years, for 2 years barely. So I didn't know anybody in the city yet. You know, I hadn't got my feet wet with anybody yet, like any organizations, nothing like that. And, you know, my kids were just starting at OLPH down the street. And so we were kind of like a quiet, you know, newcomers to the city kind of family. And, you know, when we were building Joseph's, you hear a lot of buzz, like people talking like, who are these guys? Oh yeah, they're like foreigners from another country investing money. And like, you know, all this story. And you hear about it. And it's kind of funny because, you know who you are and they don't know who you are. But like we would have like meetings every Thursday and we would like see the progression of the build out. And my partner, one of my partners, Ali, would be like, because we'd be outside in the front patio because there was no electricity in the building yet. And it was so quiet. The street was so quiet that the street lights would be out. Because, you know, street lights work on motion. Like, not even cars were driving through. And he'd be like, hey, we've been out here for like an hour talking. And not a single person or car drove by. And this is like 9:30 at night. And he's like, are you sure? Like, this is going to work? Like, he was starting to get nervous. And I was like, look, if we build it right, people will come. We build it right, people will come. Like, I know what I'm building. Like, the design was like very attractive, like just attention getting. And so lo and behold, we decided, we finally finished, we were gonna open on New Year's, and we said, you know what, we're not really ready with like staff training and stuff, let's hold it back a week. And instead of opening on a weekend, we open on a Monday so that, you know, we can get, you know, our feet wet, like, you know, get going and not mess up and not make mistakes. So we opened up on Monday and slight miscalculation. It was national championship game for college football. Not knowing.
So everyone showed up.
New sports bar in town.
Oh, we got to check it
50
out.
50 TVs. Good food.
Yeah.
Man, we had a line literally down the block on third, on second, and around the corner. At the time, Ola was just a bank. So it was around the bank and around the corner. We had a line of people waiting to get in. We had no tables. The mayor shows up. I had to pull a table from the kitchen that the employees used to eat on. And I had to pull like a chair from my office. For like the mayor and his wife and a couple of the council members, just to make seating for them available. It was like that busy. And we failed and flopped on our face miserably. Like, I think like food tickets were like an hour behind or an hour and a half behind. I mean, we're first day open and you have like a full house and you're getting buried. It was just, it was really, really difficult for us to like adapt. But then you know, Tuesday came by and it was a little slower. We were still busy, but a little slower. Wednesday was slower, Thursday. And then, you know, we got our legs under us and we were able to work out with it. And then one of my partners, Robert, who was also a partner of mine at Stock Exchange, me and him had discussed the possibly bringing in like DJ entertainment on Fridays and Saturdays after hours. Like, you know, dinner time ends like around 10. So after 10 p.m., we'll start playing music.
The nightlife. Okay. Yeah. That's where it all started.
Yeah. And then it was like a month later, we decided, okay, let's try, you know, DJ on Friday and Saturday. And then like it just blew up. Like everybody was just like basically waiting for, you know, the nightlife to just come to Downey, it seems like. They were just like dying for it.
Yeah.
You got people from Bell Gardens, Norwalk, Lakewood, Bellflower, Pico. Everybody just came in to check out the new place.
Location. I think it's still like that.
It is. Right? Actually, it is. It's,
I think it's all the surrounding cities.
This is a hub. Yeah, Downey has become really like, especially Downey Avenue has become like a hub for all the surrounding cities for entertainment. Like, you know, now it's a little different. Back then it was just Joseph's. Mm-hmm. It was Joseph's, and I think you had Bastards as a bar. And I think a month or two after we opened, Lock and Key Social Drinkery opened. Mm-hmm. At the time, it was called Lock and Key Social Drinkery. And they opened also, they were a steakhouse. And that was it. I think DB Lounge at the time was a pool hall.
Oh, yes, it was.
It wasn't even DB Lounge. It was Downey Billiards at the time. So
eventually, they started converting.
Yeah, well, I think he slowly but surely started morphing while we were doing it at the same time. He didn't, like, kind of, like, follow our lead, but he was kind of morphing. He would still have the pool tables, but he would, like, he had couches. He was kind of like a Dave & Buster's pool hall. Like, you know, like, you have, like, people who have, like,
Loungy
pool hall, yeah.
More relaxed nightlife.
Yeah, kind of like Lucky Strike where it's bowling, but nightclub.
Yeah.
He was like a pool hall nightclub kind of thing at the time. And then, you know, when we opened up, I think he got more business too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anytime you know, people stress when they see new businesses open, like competitors. I don't see people as competitors. I see people as like, oh, you're helping me, my cause.
Yeah.
Because you're bringing people in. You're attracting more people to the city,
yes,
to our little nook or whatever, per se, you know what I mean? So it all works for the benefit. I don't think people take business away from you. I think people benefit you at the long run.
I think it's something that we see already now in Downey. We have so many businesses, as you mentioned, that it's evolved so much since then. So
the evolution is incredible. The evolution
it's like
is incredible.
Every Friday and Saturday we have to go through traffic if you're trying to go through downtown.
No, it's incredible. It's kind of exciting. Like I said, it's fun to see now where people in the downtown Downey area, like on Friday and Saturday, like the bar hopping.
Yes.
Like literally, like you see them walking out and then they'll go next door and then they'll walk back out and they'll go back in and then they'll walk back, go down the street. Mm-hmm. Like you have, you know, Ola, you have Joseph's, you have Mambo, you have Bella, you have Mandala, Beso, even LKSD is playing some night, and then and you have Mosaic. The Hookah Lounge, you know, like, Bastards was there, but, you know, they've closed recently. But, you know, you just have so many options in one block. It's becoming a lot of fun.
It's like a little bit for everyone. Like, it's like no matter what you're in the vibe for or what you're in the mood for that night, it's, you can go to the Hookah Lounge, you can go to the sports bar, or if you want to dress up a little. I think we have it all here.
Yeah, yeah, we do. We have a good variety of options here, definitely,
And did you envision yourself having all these businesses on the same block?
No, I did not. Honestly, I never envisioned it. I thought it was Joseph's. And then when we were successful, I honestly thought, oh, maybe we'll open more Joseph's. And we're in the process of opening another one right now, 13 years later. But that was the plan. Like, let's open more. And then we just got, I got sidetracked with other projects, other project opportunities. I think it started with my friend Adnan, who owned Mosaic. He was like venturing out to do something else and he wanted to sell Mosaic.
Ah, I see.
The law had changed. It was no longer 18 and over to smoke. It was 21 and over. I think he lost his entertainment permit with the city.
Oh, I
So he was kind of struggling, and at the same time, he wanted to try something different. So he asked me if I wanted to buy, because he knew I was, you know, mm-hmm. I'm Middle Eastern, so I kind of like to smoke hookah, and we had a good relationship, and I decided to buy it. So I was like, step one, it was like, okay, now I have Joseph's and I have Mosaic. And then, you know, this location came up. At the time, it was a, I think a kitchen hardware store, like kitchen sinks.
The Bella Lounge.
Bella Lounge, yeah. They would sell like kitchen sinks and faucets and stuff like that. And they were out of business. And I knew it was going up for lease. And I talked to the landlord and I told him what I had in mind. He was on board with my plan. And I started, you know, the drawings and plans, and went through hell with the city with their vision of what they wanted it to look like. And mm-hmm. I was like, look, I'm the guy who's paying the money for it, so I think it should be what I want it to look like. And you know, we just went back and forth, and I gave them a design, and they were like, oh no, this is too pretty for the street. And I was like, what do you mean it's too pretty? Like, no, you won't blend. I'm like, the whole point of a business is not to blend. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole concept of a business is to stick out. Mm-hmm. When we built Joseph's, it was all glass, lights, mirrors. We literally had, not that it's a good thing, but we literally had car accidents in front of the building, mm-hmm. because people would stop and look inside, mm-hmm. and people appealing. Would get re-rendered. Mm-hmm. So visually it was appealing. And I mean, obviously it's gotten old now, you know, we've mm-hmm. changed it a lot throughout the years, but when we first opened, it was just very attractive. It stood out. It stood out like a sore thumb in the block.
Especially with the lights off.
Yeah.
Out on the streets.
You know, now when I was starting to build Bella's, I was like, look, I want the same thing. Like, I want to stand out.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, this design belongs in Beverly Hills, not in Downey. I'm like, okay, fine. So when I came up with another design, like, I morphed it and I adjusted things to kind of fit their requirements. And finally, they agreed. They were against the open air concept. I submitted that before anyone else had open air concept here in Downey, mm-hmm. and they were against it. And then finally I went against the planning division, and I went to the planning commission, and I presented, and I told them, I go, look, it was around COVID time too.
Oh, I see.
And I told them, look, COVID requires fresh air circulation. Mm-hmm. What better design do you want to, you know, to help that? Like, yeah. An open air design is the perfect thing, and I think that's the, you know, wave of the future. And I think the commission kind of saw the same thing, and they agreed with me, not with the planning department, and they approved it. Mm-hmm. And you know, unfortunately, because of COVID, the project kind of took like 3 years to get off the ground.
A long time, yeah.
It was a long time. Yeah, I mm-hmm. paid rent for 3 years without mm-hmm. having use of the space. It was difficult, but you know, it went over budget because COVID prices, you know, everything went up in price. By the time I was ready to build, it was already after COVID, mm-hmm. or by the time I was allowed to build, it was already after COVID. So my you know, my budget went mm-hmm. not 10% over, not 20% over, almost 100% over, doubled.
Wow,
yeah, doubled.
But talking about COVID, what are some changes or challenges that you encountered with all your businesses, aside from the budget with Bella?
Well, I mean, like I already told you what the problem was with Bella's. That was just, COVID was like, COVID was disastrous for Bella's, because really it wasn't in build out stage yet. Mm-hmm. It was still in, like, we were negotiating with the city. So it kind of like put a halt for a long period of time. Because mm-hmm. even when restaurants were able to open again,
you're limited.
Bella's was not able to open because I wasn't open yet. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't even able to construct yet. And then even when the PPPs and the assistance came in, I couldn't apply here because I wasn't a functioning business yet.
Wow.
So COVID really hurt me here. But as far as Joseph's is concerned, I think what we did was I always prepare for doomsday. It's just mm-hmm. my human nature. I've always been the kind of guy, like, my partners be like, oh, well, we have this much money in the account. Why are we keeping an account? Like, let's say, I'm like, look, let's just leave it there. You know, you never know, for a rainy day. Mm-hmm. We might have a bad month, or you never know what's going to happen. You never know. I mean,
something.
I'm not thinking, mm-hmm. you know, a millennial disease, you know what I mean?
No,
but I was thinking, you know, something might happen, like where we can't function for a couple mm-hmm. of weeks. So we have to have backup. So we always had like a good little nest egg mm-hmm. saved for Joseph's. And then when COVID hit, coincidentally, we were due for a renewal, like a facelift. I believe to maintain success is you need to have a facelift every 3 to 4 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's just a cycle, right? Like, you know, trends change, colors change. You have to keep up.
Or like wear and tear.
Wear and tear. Well, wear and tear, you almost have that with any place. Any restaurant you have, there's always going to be wear and tear. And you have to maintain that. But I mean, like, just changes physically. Like, you know, Joseph's, like I said, used to have, I think, like, red and purple colors. Now it's black and gray and whites, which is the new colors. You know, the floor, we changed the floor. It used to be just, I think, the concrete. Now we have, you know, tiled floor. Hardwood look tiled floor. You know, just the TVs. We went away from 50 TVs. Now we have like 40 TVs. Mm-hmm. But we have two huge LED monitors, which act as like large TVs. Mm-hmm. You know, new technology came out. Now I have 4 90-inch screens in there. Wow. You know, the largest screens available. So my bar TV went from, I think the original largest size was 70, then it went to 80, now it's at 90. You know, as new technology comes out with larger sizes, you have to go along with it. You know, change colors, change, just facelift. Like, really when I say facelift, I legitimately mean a facelift. Like, kind of keep it exciting with your customers. Mm-hmm. Keep them coming back to see what new thing you're doing. What changes are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, people eventually get tired of the same look. They do. You know, so it just, you have to keep it fresh.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And especially since now I think that we've been hearing that the nightlife is kind of dying out. But I think here it's actually becoming more active, right?
It's actually the bar hopping, right? It's the bar hopping. So yeah, so when COVID came, mm-hmm. we had a nest egg and we were due for a remodel anyway. So we used that time, the downtime, mm-hmm. to do construction. You know, we did the floor and my workers that I have that do my maintenance, mm-hmm. were so happy that they had work during a time where there was no work, you know, and they usually leave before curfew anyway. So, you know, because they're not going to work in the dark, but, you know, it fit everybody. Mm-hmm. Like it worked out for everybody. It was just very hard to get like supplies. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, essentials opened up really quickly. Mm-hmm. And Home Depot is one of them. So that's why the DIY, you know,
that all exploded.
But so they were able to get the supplies they needed to do the construction, the flooring, the wall paint. We just changed the whole look of the place. So when we came out of COVID, it was like a new place.
Like,
it was like,
ready.
Yeah, we're like a new business. Now we got that new excitement all of a sudden. And, you know, when the patio season came, when the city allowed everybody to have their front patios, their COVID patios, we had like half the street pretty much because they allowed us to close Downey Avenue for a little while. Mm-hmm. And we opened up a killer patio. I mean, like it wasn't like one of those basic, like, oh, we're putting up like, yeah, we had like grass. We had, it looked like, you know, it had like greenery. It looked like you were in your backyard. And people were just loving it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not kidding you. We literally were doing like our normal numbers. We were like doubling, maybe tripling our normal numbers.
Wow.
Our normal numbers with a whole restaurant.
Before COVID,
wow. We were doubling or tripling with just a patio because it was only outdoor seating at the time. And we had to keep tables 6 feet apart. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we were able to cram people in. But we had so much just excitement about the patio. And I think people also were like dying to get out.
Yes.
And, you know, they had extra stimulus money to spend. There so, you know, they were spending it. People were spending money and they were just dying to get out and go out. And it looked pretty. You know, we had like twinkle lights in the middle of the street. Yeah. It was really nice.
Everyone loves the aesthetic.
And yeah, and that really helped us, believe it or not, mm-hmm. make it. Because a lot of people that came out of COVID, they kind of like, you know, stepped on the wrong foot right off the bat, mm-hmm. and they weren't able to recover all the losses that they took during COVID. Mm-hmm. Luckily, when we opened, because we went all out, we had that nest egg to spend, mm-hmm. we went all out and spent it. We spent it all. We mm-hmm. came out of COVID with no money in the bank. Ooh. But we gambled, mm-hmm. and I figured, hey, spend it, you'll get it back. Mm-hmm. And we spent it, and honestly, like I'm telling you, we were doubling or tripling our sales. Literally, like minimum double, but closer to triple our sales, at least for the first 3-4 months after COVID, when we had that outdoor patio. It was like, mayhem. We had like people waiting again. It was like all, you know, everybody was excited again.
It's like COVID who?
Yeah, COVID who, exactly.
Who's that? We don't know.
Exactly.
So how did you come about naming your bars? Joseph Sports Bar, and I know Bella also has a story.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually, it's a funny story, but it's cute. So I have four kids. Two of them are twins, boy and girl. Mm-hmm. And the boy's name is Joseph. Mm. And the girl's name is Isabella. Bella.
It's so cute.
So I always thought, like, you know, Joseph being a sports bar, and it's a boy, sports, boy, just fit. And then when I built this place, I kind of built it with two people in mind. One was Bella, my Isabella, which is like, you know, like more of like a girly bar. And it really is a girly bar.
It's so cute.
Yeah, it really is a girly bar.
We're in Bella Lounge right now.
Yeah. You know, like you got your crystal glassware, you got your like, you know, like plush curtain backgrounds, velvet seats. It's like very, very cute. Like even the colors in here are like pink and blue and green, like that was just my whole vision. And then on the other side also, when I was building Bella, my dad had passed away.
Aww.
And thank you COVID, actually. And my dad is a jeweler. So the colors all represent something for me. My dad loved he was a jeweler by trade. Like he was actually a master jeweler. He made jewelry with his hands.
Oh, wow.
And so and he loved precious stones. So my whole aesthetics of the building here, the color scheme, the design. By the way, I design all my places. Joseph's was my design. This is my design. I do have designers that help me do the renderings, but I'm the one who does all the details.
The details. It's beautiful. Very beautiful.
Thank you. So what I did was I built the bar with a gold top for gold, because he worked with gold. He's a jeweler. The emerald green
boots. That's the first thing that came to my mind.
The pink coral seats around the bar. The blue sapphire seats at the tables. You know, even the bar, the bottom of the bar, the mirrors represent diamonds. I use crystal glassware specifically. Everything here is crystal. I don't use regular glass glassware. You know, it just the walls, if you look at it, it has a sheen to it. It's like mother of pearl.
Oh, I see.
It's actually called a mother of pearl paint. It's a specific kind of paint that I used for the Venetian plaster design, and it's mother of pearl. So everything I did here had a meaning to it. Like I was very specific and detailed in every piece that I did. And so, you know, I figured, oh, it's a girly bar. I got to build it more of a girly bar, even though I'm a guy. I built it like a girl because it's Bella. It's Bella
No,
Lounge.
But it's beautiful. Yeah. I mean, it's the first thing that comes to mind is like, I want to invite my girlfriends.
Yeah, it's a great girl bar. Yes, yes.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And then now my youngest one is waiting. Her name is Layla. So I don't know.
A beautiful name too.
Yeah, we're thinking, I don't know, we might do like Lulu's something. Her nickname is Lulu. So I don't know. Maybe Lulu's so Cupcakes or something. I don't know. That's in the future.
So
it's still coming.
Cupcakes here too.
Coming soon, yeah.
So that you mentioned that before starting your businesses, you were living in Downey for 2 years. So what are some ways that you've connected with the community now that you've been a part of Downey for such a long time?
Well, you know, my wife, actually, believe it or not, starts with my wife. She, very people person. And she's very involved with the community. She's on the board for the YMCA here. She was with a Chamber of Commerce. She's on the, I forgot, I think the both my kids are part of the Assistance League. She's a troop leader for the Downey Girl Scouts. So both my daughters are Girl Scouts. One of them's actually, she already got her Gold Award. So she graduated Girl Scouts. My son's an Eagle Scout. That Downey Troop 1, actually, which is the first troop in Southern California, I guess, or something. Yeah, I didn't even know that Downey had that troop.
Right?
It started here. And, you know, like, my kids were involved in sports in OLPH. You know, we worked the carnival. So we got to meet a lot of the parents. We became part of the community very quickly. It's a very, you know, it's a small, big city or big, small city. I don't know how to word it, but because it's not the biggest city, but it's a lot of people. but it acts as a small city. So like everybody knows everybody here, mm-hmm. Good and bad. You know what I mean?
No, yeah.
Everybody knows like everybody's business here too. So, you know,
it's small town vibe.
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like everybody knows everybody here. And then, you know, me being a business owner before I bought any other places, mm-hmm. just Joseph's alone was just a such a large part of the city at the time. Mm-hmm. Even though we didn't have the history, but we became big part of the city right away. Mm-hmm. We were like, you know, we're big supporters of the police department, the fire department, mm-hmm. Any charities that were involved. We were always willing and wanting to be involved. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer, you know, you got to help to receive, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And even if you don't receive, so what, but at least you helped, you know, because you feel good. It feels good to help.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, people need help and you can help. Why not? Mm-hmm. You know, if you can't, you can. I get it. But if you can help, why not? Like, honestly, like during COVID, like we were talking about COVID. During COVID, we were open during COVID as a restaurant, you know, to go orders. Mm-hmm. At that, by that time, we weren't really known for our food anymore. We were more of like a sports bar and a club. The restaurant part kind of like disappeared. And so we didn't really get a lot of orders. But to give my employees hours and money in their pocket to, you know, pay their bills or whatever, I opened. Mm-hmm. I opened as many hours as I could or that were allowed to open. And we did to-go sales, but we really didn't sell anything. But we were still, you know, I still had employees there, you know, working to help them out. And, you know, and in return, basically, I get loyalty from my employees and they love me for it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not never a bad thing to help. Mm-mm. And my partners, believe it or not, were always on board and helping and being participants with the city, like, you know, with Good, with Downey. We were big participants with their golf tournament, supporters. You know, we tried to participate as much as possible. And I think that kind of got us a lot closer with the community. They got to know us. We got to know them. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could have been easily just, you know, owners, standoffish and, you know, let the money roll in and we're just happy to see it. No, we're always present. You know, a lot of people know me, know my partners by name. Customers, non-customers. A lot of, just the familiarity of it.
Yeah. And I think that's a very beautiful thing because I think that, I mean, as we can see, you transform the nightlife here on the street. And not only do you have your businesses, but I know we have night markets now. And I think that it's just, you really tied everyone together too. And I think that it's great that you're able to give back to your community and participate. And I think that's what makes people want to shop. Even myself as a consumer, I automatically want to go and support businesses that are always looking for ways to give back to their community or their employees, just anyone in general. So I think that's a very beautiful thing. Now I would like to jump into some fun questions.
Okay.
So for those who maybe are in thinking about becoming an entrepreneur, what are some tips or what is some advice that you may have for them?
In all honesty, like I've gotten this question mm-hmm. asked a lot, actually. I have mm-hmm. my oldest daughter's friends are all in their like mid-20s right now. So mm-hmm. they come and sit with me and they want like pick my brain, like, hey, I want to learn. Like, what do I do? And the number one thing, which unfortunately this generation, this new generation kind of lacks a little bit. Mm-hmm. I always tell them that it's all about hard work. It starts with hard work. Mm-hmm. Number one, the number one thing is you cannot be afraid of working hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's also obviously other things involved. One of them being luck. You have to be lucky and you have to be good. If you're both, look out. You know what I mean? Like you got the triple threat kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you work hard, you're lucky and you're good. Then you got the triple threat. But you can, number one thing is you cannot be afraid of working. Mm-hmm. Like it's funny because like I think we were talking about this earlier. We were laughing about it, about mm-hmm. like the stuff on the, you know, social media where, you know, oh, what an owner of a restaurant, what everybody thinks an owner of a restaurant looks like coming into work.
With
his glasses, his coat. Somebody takes his coat off of him, gives him a Starbucks, walking in with glasses on, mm-hmm. like a star. And then it shows you what a real mm-hmm. restaurant or bar owner looks like coming into work, carrying bags and stuff. And in all honesty, it's true. Mm-hmm. It's funny because it's true. And it is hard work. It's mm-hmm. always, it's hard work every day. Mm-hmm. It's something new every day. Refrigerator broke down. The light needs replacing. AC is not working. It's something's always happening. Mm-hmm. And you have to be available and amiable to it. You have to be willing to adjust and adapt and, you know, and work. Really, it's work. And it's, you start early. And I always tell them, when younger people come to me, I tell them, look, start early. Because look, if you fail, you have time to make it back. But you have to take a chance. You can't win the lottery if you don't play. You can't win the lotto if you don't buy a ticket. And so you have to take a chance sooner or later in life. Better do it sooner than later. Because the later it becomes in life, the harder it is for you to recover if you do lose. And the likelihood is you are going to lose, because that's what happens. You lose, 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 eventually you'll win.
And I think your story is very inspiring, because that's what you mentioned, that right off the bat, it was very, there's a lot of challenges that came about. So I think there's a lot of good stuff in what you mentioned. Yeah. I think I'll have to take your advice.
Thanks.
And as far as maybe somebody who wants to balance, like, you know, family and balance the work life, what are some tips for that, or advice for that?
Again, it's not easy. I mean, you know, I try to balance as much as I could. It's still not easy, but I try to make sure I have my family time. So like Sundays are my family time. Like my kids, Nye, my wife, we go out to dinner. That's like our family day. I try to eat dinner with them as many nights as I could during the week. There's some nights where, you know, we're just, there's no time, or there's, or they're busy too. You know, they're getting older, you know, they're teenagers now. They're going out with their friends. It happens. But, you know, still, I know they appreciate it because they look forward to it. Even though, you know, 19, 20 year olds don't want to spend time with their parents. But I think they see the effort coming from my side, so they make the effort. And that's been always a staple, where I'm always trying to make that effort. It is hard though with multiple businesses. When you own multiple businesses, you know, you're being pulled apart
in every direction.
And you know, in all honesty, my wife helps out a lot. Like, it, without her, it'd be like almost impossible to do all of this, because, you know, she holds down the fort. You know, kids need to go somewhere, she drives them. You know, she takes them places. I try to be there, but I'm not a guarantee, because I have priorities that are required to maintain the family in order to, you know, it's our income. So it's hard to juggle. It is. But if you set a certain schedule, or at least make sure there's time that is unequivocally, that's family time. Like, there's no matter what happens, if you have to shut down, shut down. That's family time. And that's, I make sure that that stays. That way, it's never a question like, I didn't get to spend time with my family because, oh, I had to open. No, that day belongs to them. It doesn't belong to work.
To anything else. That's very beautiful. Well, Simon, thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you, Natalie.
It was great to learn about your entrepreneurial journey and how to balance that life and work-life balance.
I appreciate it.
That wraps up today's episode of Talking Downey Business Edition. If you are a business in Downey and would like to be featured in our future episode, go ahead and reach out to us. We would love to hear from you and share your story with our community.